Welcome to the Traditional Arts Indiana podcast, featuring interviews with craftspeople and artists from our residency series at the Mathers Museum of World Cultures in Bloomington. I am your host, Emily Burke. Today's podcast features a recording from our archives. This recording, created during the 2015 Lotus World Arts and Music Festival, features Director of Traditional Arts Indiana, John Kay, conducting a narrative stage event with woodcarver and icon maker Father Jerome Sanderson. We hope you enjoy this interview, recorded in front of a live audience at an outdoor event.
Just a wonderful day today. We've had fourth or fifth generation basket makers. We've had hoop net making that goes back 150, 200 years here in southern Indiana. And we've got limestone carving that's in the style of early 19th century stones. But perhaps this may be one of the oldest art forms that we're going to talk about today. And I'm excited to bring Father Sanderson to talk about his icon writing and his wood carving. So, Father Sanderson, welcome.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about where you're from and how you got introduced to this type of art?
I was born in Ohio, and about 43 years ago, I joined a religious order that eventually became Orthodox. And I've always been interested in art. In fact, my teachers in school used to always see drawings on my papers, including my test papers, and they said, Jerry, you're going to regret drawing all the time instead of paying attention. But so far, I haven't regretted it, it seems to be. And so when I came into Orthodoxy and saw icons, at first, I didn't like them. I didn't understand them. But eventually, as I began to appreciate their purpose and what they really did to the soul, I began to try to teach myself, which for 20 years I think I tried to teach myself, and eventually found teachers that helped me to find the way to really do it, because it's not something that's easy to teach yourself, even if you're an artist, you know.
Right. Well, why don't you give us a guided tour of what your eyes had to learn to see? When we look at an icon like the one maybe to your left here, how are we to approach that? How are we to see that?
Well, first of all, icons are not meant to be realistic in the terms of physical. We're not trying to make something sensual. We're trying to make it otherworldly and to convey something of the soul, the spirituality of man. Music, art, affects the soul. So certain music makes you want to dance. Certain music makes you want to be silent. Certain music lifts you up. And certain music really makes you angry. You know, there are some people that have committed suicide after listening to some of the junk music, as I call it. Art is like that. Icons basically mean image. And image has a broad range of things. When the first time you hear image in the Bible is when God said, let us make man in our image. And so any painting can be an icon, literally. And so I always say holy icons, because holy icons are meant to lift the soul upward. Now, there are evil icons. I consider pornography Satan's icons, because they make the soul more passionate, angry, lustful. And so art has the power to influence a person's nature. And icons are different from art. We don't even consider it art, because the purpose is not to glorify the iconographer. You won't see a signature on here, because the iconographer seeks to be an instrument of God, of the Holy Spirit. An iconographer tries to pray when he's painting. And he seeks to be in a state of communion so that the grace of God will influence the work, to influence the person's prayer who stands before it. An icon, we consider a window into heaven. Now, here is how to explain that. If you know anything about the Ark of the Covenant that God directed Moses to build, it was crafted just like an icon by an artist. It was gold, it was told to be a certain way, but its purpose wasn't to be a beautiful piece of art. It was to be a means of communication with God. And power moved through that ark. it was they took it in the warfare sometimes, and it, you know, affected the enemy. When the Jews were in the desert for 40 years, there was a point when they were bitten by fiery snakes, and some were dying, and Moses prayed to God, and God says, put a bronze serpent upon a pole. That's where we get the caduceus, the medical symbol from. Mm-hmm. And those that look upon it will be healed. Now that bronze serpent, what was it about it that people got healed? It was because it was a window through which grace would come, through which blessing and healing would come. And that's what icons are meant to be. They're in the church to be windows into heaven. When you look at an icon, you're not focused on the icon or say you're focused beyond it. And so it's just like when you look out a window, you're not focused upon the window, are you? You're looking beyond it to the outside. And so you'll see in an Orthodox church people kissing an icon. And they think, aha, that's idol worship. Well, is it idol worship when you kiss your Aunt Martha? Or whatever, it's veneration. It's honoring. And we believe that the church is the church triumphant, which is those that are beyond the body, the church militant, which are those that are here. And we have, as Paul calls it, a cloud of witnesses about us. And these icons represent those that are have gone beyond, that are praying for us, that are our brothers and sisters. And so in the Orthodox Church, we try to depict them. When I was a kid, at my grandmother's house, they had pictures of all my 10 aunts and uncles on the wall and their children and so forth. And that's what the church is meant to be. It's our home. It shows our spiritual family. Mm-hmm. And so that's what icons are. We believe that there is grace that moves through them. So the icons, once again, aren't meant to be realistic. So sometimes the fingers are elongated. When the icons are painted, there is a spiritual procession. There is a rule to how they are made. In this example, you see icons that, first a drawing, and then you start with the darker colors, because man progresses from darkness to light. You notice that the saints have halos, because they have more light. As Jesus says, if your eye is single, your body shall be full of light. And those that are prayerful and single-minded become more full of light. So with each stage, you see a little bit more light. You see more light in the garment. Until final stage, you see the light has come and illuminated, so to speak, the icon, but it shows the progression. And so that is what people are looking for. They're looking to try to look with the spirit to be touched by it, and they're looking to reach beyond it. There's a story of a man, a priest that went to the Amazons, and he converted this village from idol worship. And one of the villagers was so fervent and so dedicated that he sent him to the big city to be ordained, to be trained and ordained. And while he was there, he saw a man on the corner. He had never been to the big city, talking on his cell phone, and the man was saying, oh, honey, I love you. I miss you. You are the light of my life. And then he made kissy noises, like that. Well, this Amazon was scandalized, and he said, sir, do you know what you have done? You have just worshipped that thing in your hand. I know this because I used to do that. He says, I did what? He says, you worshipping that thing. I heard you say you loved it and make kissy noises at it. He says, no, I was talking to my wife. He says, that thing is your wife? He says, no. I was talking through this to my wife who has one of these. And though she lives 10 miles away, she can hear me talk to her through this. And Peter says, oh, so she has one. So you're not talking to that. You're talking to her through that. He said, yes. He says, I understand. Forgive me for judging you. And the man says, that's okay. But that's what icons are. We're not worshiping this board. We're worshiping that, or even with most of the saints, we don't worship any saint. We worship only God. But we see through this, and to saints that are praying for us, that are interceding for us, to Jesus Christ, and the icon becomes a window for grace, just as that bronze serpent in the wilderness became a window for grace.
Right.
And so that explains it.
Oh, that's a beautiful explanation, a lot of great story into understanding that that lens, you might say. One of the things that we as a folklorist do is it's great to think about that as a window. If I was going to work with window makers, though, I would look and judge the window by how I could look through it. But then I would also talk to the maker about, well, how did you make that window? So maybe we can we've talked about what it is from the kind of 5,000-mile high view of looking through that window. Can you tell me a little bit about the process more that goes into making? And maybe you can even start from who you're making these for and how you come up with what you're going to make.
I generally get commissions. I've done icons all over the country. And iconostasis, I also do wood carving for churches all over the country. And so it's generally commissions. This is the only icon I've done for myself because I love the image and painted. This was on our shrine at home. But it starts off with finding a board. These days, we often will use a special high-grade plywood. And so we take the board and we go through a process of putting glue on it, a very thin glue to penetrate, and then a cloth, a linen cloth or muslin, something that the glue would penetrate through. And then we make what we call gesso, which is a combination of rabbit skin glue and chalk and marble, boiled to a certain way, and we put layers on the board. And using a trowel, we make it as smooth as we can, and eventually we sand it till we have a board with seven or eight or more layers of that gesso. And so it's a very white board then, and we begin to paint. We generally will have a cartoon, or sometimes iconographers will just draw right on the board. And then, as with this thing, we begin with the darker colors and get those on and begin to go from dark to light. This shows five stages, but really there's probably 20 or 30 in it. And I did this rather quickly, but this was the process that you just keep adding colors and refining it towards the end till you have an image. All the time you're praying, you're trying to be in a state of repentance. Traditionally, iconographers would fast from meat and dairy and sexual activity when they're painting because they want to be in a holy state. And they want it to be in a place where they are most attuned to God. Mm-hmm. And so it's a spiritual practice to paint icons, because to paint icons is to be praying, traditionally. And, you know, the first commandment is to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and who can get close to that? But I like doing a work that helps me to get close to that, where that's been the tradition. And I have to admit, I've never achieved it to do it all day. Generally, after about an hour or so, I remember that I haven't thought about God for an hour, and I'll go right back. But that's the effort that you make. You struggle to be vigilant, to be focused, to not have judgmental thoughts, proud thoughts, self-centered thoughts, and so forth. And it's warfare.
Right.
We put gold on. Often they'll put on gold first. This is 22-karat gold. If you've ever seen the gold on the domes of churches, it's the same gold. It's like a 3-inch by 3-inch leaf that you put on. You put on what they call a size, but it's kind of like a varnish that would dry. There's a slow size that would be dry in an hour or two. There's a fast size that would be dry in an hour or two. There's a slow size that would take 8 to 12 hours. And then you put those leaves on and burnish them. And after they're dry, you put a finish on there so it won't rub off, so that when you're painting, the paint won't get on the gold.
Right.
Or you could just wipe it off real easily. And the whole time, you're praying. That's
beautiful. And I would imagine that, we look at a process like this. We look at the painting, and one of the things you notice about it is it looks somewhat flat. Its composition sometimes seems a little simplified compared to realism that you talked about. But I would imagine the process of making is very long in creating one, and that's probably connects with that prayerful aspect of iconography. Can you talk a little bit about how long it takes you from start to finish to do an icon like the one that's sitting next to you here?
Well, this icon is especially complex because all the gold lines, and that's real gold, takes quite a bit of time to do. And then sometimes I had to come back and paint the orange where the line was wavy or this or that. So this took probably 2 weeks. If I was to work 6 to 8 hours a day, that took a while. There are less complex icons, but you know, all this fringe work took a while, and even doing the board before I start painting takes 6 hours sometimes. And so it's a process. People sometimes say, well, how much for an icon? And they start about 500, and they don't realize that $500. I said, well, I've worked for 6 hours just to get the board ready before I began painting. And so it's a lot of work, but it's a work that I love doing. I'd almost pay to do it.
Don't say that too often.
Okay, yeah, I don't.
I know that most people recognize what this is a painting of, but maybe you should tell us, for those of us that don't know what the icon that's to your left here is of, explain what it is and what it means to you.
This is Mary holding the child Jesus. We call Mary in the Orthodox Church Theotokos, which means the God-bearer. She bore God in her womb. And Mary is not someone that we worship, but that we highly honor. In fact, in Scripture it says, all generations shall call me blessed, because she bore God. God took flesh from her. Mm-hmm. And so even though there was no father, she bore him, and her work was always to point to Christ. So you see her hand kind of point to him. Different icons like the Hodegetria means the way sharer, the pointer. You know, in Scripture, the last thing that Mary says is early on in 2 John at the wedding of Cana, when she tells the young men, whatever he says, do it. That is said to all of us. And that's pretty much her mission, to direct people to Christ. And so her bearing the child God is an amazing mystery, because God is uncontainable.
Right.
And yet he was in her womb. They called her paradise because God dwelt in her. Where God is paradise. And they say, call her more honorable than the cherubim and the seraphim, because even though God sat upon this cherubim, and of course this is putting God in human terms, only in Mary did he actually dwell in her womb at that level. Now, of course, he is supposed to grow in each of us.
Right.
And of course, we are all should be pure and point to him as well. But that's what the icon is. We honor her, and we feel that she is our mother as well. And our mother that whose foremost desire is to bring us to God. In fact, there's a kind of joke, but story. I wouldn't be surprised if stood this man up to heaven, and he said, well, where's Mary? And Jesus says, well, she's probably down in hell dragging some other soul out. Because that was her work, to kind of go in the back door to bring others to heaven. And not that God isn't merciful, but he has given her the role to be mother. And mothers, you know how mothers are. Oh, honey, don't give him a spanking. He'll be okay. You know, they're always trying to, they're the merciful side, even though Jesus was the most merciful of all. There's an icon called the Platte, and there are many miracle-working icons. Miracle-working icons that were seen by thousands of people. There's an icon in Russia called the Ivron icon, where the Tsar's daughter was paralyzed and dreamed that if she had this icon from Mount Athos brought to Russia, she would be healed. And the Tsar wrote the patriarch, who wrote the abbot, and the monks were kind of stunned because they loved this. They called it their protectress. But after prayer, they were directed to paint a copy, to wash the original and wash the board, and to pray nonstop while they worked on the icon. At the end, they took the icon to Russia. And when they found out that it was arriving, the Tsar went down to greet it. And everyone from the palace left except for the servants and the daughter that didn't even know. And at one point, she says, "Where is everybody?" And the maid said, "They've gone to greet the Ivron icon." And she says, "What?" And she jumps out of the bed, and she runs down the street, and she runs up to her father. And the father's heading towards the icon when he sees the crowd looking. And he turns around, and he sees his daughter. And when she runs up to him and sees him crying, she suddenly realizes for the first time that she was walking.
Oh, yeah.
With this, the Tsar and thousands of people saw this because it was a big deal. At that point, the Tsar said, "Can we have this icon?" They said, "Yes." He built a special chapel for it in the Kremlin. And up until the time of communism, that was there. You know, and then communists did a lot of stuff with it, but and then endowed that monastery for the rest of his existence until communism. So there are hundreds of miracle-working icons like that.
That's a fantastic story. I'm sure that the two of us could probably talk for hours and hours, but we don't have a lot of time. But I wanted to see, are there anyone in the audience that wants to ask a question of Father Sanderson? Casey? Can you talk about the lettering?
The lettering is Greek, although you can do them in English. This means a metotheo, which means a mother of God. Down here is ICXE, which when you see a little dash over there, it's kind of like shortened, it's initials. And so XE is Jesus Christos. XE, Jesus Christos, which means Jesus Christ. And so that is often put on icons because a lot of the icons, even Russian icons, will often have those Greek letters on them.
And any other questions here? Right up here in front.
I don't. I've been painting for many years, but I still consider myself a student. There's a teacher, an excellent teacher in Indianapolis named Mother Catherine. And I actually go there when I can to learn from her. But
my second question is, are you copying something else, or is it divinely inspired?
We try to copy prototypes and not come up with our own thing. There's a tradition, and a lot of those traditions go way back to people that actually knew them. And so we try our best, but sometimes somebody will ask me for an icon of someone that there's no icon for. In that case, I'll pray and ask for help. But it's not like I think, well, she must have been a very voluptuous saint. She must have been very thin. You know, I don't try to figure that out. But sometimes I am inspired, but that's the best I can do. But where there's a prototype, I try to follow that prototype.
That's great. Well, I know we could talk a lot more, but they're getting ready to start the other stage in just a minute. I want you to say a little bit about the wood carving, because we didn't even get a chance to really talk about that. Can you tell people what it is and how you got started doing this and what it's for?
I began carving in 1973. I was working in a restaurant in Milwaukee, a health food restaurant, and they had the biggest carrots you ever saw. And I found when there was no customers, that I would begin to carve on those and try to figure out how to carve, because carving is opposite from drawing in clay. You're not, like for instance, this face was always in this block of wood. I have to carve away everything that isn't face. If you're carving an elephant, you're taking away everything that isn't elephant. And so you have to kind of believe that that elephant's in there. And so like with carving, you go from the highest. And so to get this nose, I have to carve the forehead back, the lips back, and in order of prominence, bring it out. So I carved one on both sides. But that's the process. It's different than art, than painting or sculpt or clay, in that you're not putting anything on the board. You're taking away. And I like that.
If you all want to learn more about the icons and about the wood carving, you're going to be over in your booth for a little bit longer till 5 o'clock. I encourage you all to go over there and talk with Father Sanderson. Thank you very much for being here today. Let's hear it again for Father Sanderson and the work that he does.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you have enjoyed this podcast and will tune in again next time. This podcast would not be possible without the support of the National Endowment for the Arts, the Indiana Arts Commission, and Indiana University's Themester Program.